Welcome to the September 17, 2019 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, and this week I've been doing a little bit of programming, and I did get a Altera Max 10 today, so in the mail, so that was nice. So that's about it for me. Would somebody go and bring John down to the R side of the
User in your channel is
session?
Recording.
Oh, thank you, John. So now we'll go down the list. Next on the list, we have Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. I've been plugging away when I have some time this week. Had a lot of interruptions on stuff concerning the magnetometer. Came across some papers that really did a lot better job of evaluating the PNI magnetometer than I can ever conceivably do myself. Just been plugging away at this and that with more interruptions than I'd care for. But that's it. Over.
Okay, Dave. And next on the list, we have John N8OBJ. Go ahead, John.
User in your channel is recording.
Not sure if John's figured out how to do his push to talk or anything, but we'll come back to him. Next on the list is KD8OXT. Go ahead.
Yeah, the push to talk button defaults to the right hand alt key. Maybe that's what you're missing.
So, KD8OXT, you are in the right place, and we will let you try to figure out how to. You need to figure out what your push to talk button is, and then we can move forward. And John has a push to talk button. Go ahead, John. Well, I'll go on down the list and we'll come back to you. Next on the list is Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and Mike muted. And we thank Mike for posting the recordings to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Next on the list, we have Nathan, N2NAF. Go ahead, Nathan.
Thank you very much, Dave. Nathaniel's here. Things are going well, so I'm glad to see John N8OBJ and Christina KD8OXT on the list tonight. I guess they're having trouble with their microphone, but both of them are from Case Western, and they're going to be working on the lower cost version of the personal space weather station, so I'm really glad that they could join us here tonight. It's been a very, very busy week for me at school with classes and everything. The big thing I've done this week for the personal space weather station is I reviewed the documentation that Bill Engelke put out about the local host control, the local host, and the central control system. I reviewed those specifications, and I gave a number of comments on them. And Bill's looking at those, and he also sent them out to the list, and he's going to be looking for comments. And hopefully we can talk about these and also Tom N5EG's list of questions at the Tapper meeting this week. W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business, Nathan. And next on the list, we have Ned, AA7A. Go ahead, Ned.
Hi, Dave. Thank you very much. This is Ned, AA7A. For those who don't know me, I'm on the team. It's called the Noise Study Program, potential user of this Tangerine SDR when it comes around. We may use a proxy for a while, but my role is sort of the architect for a system that will be brought online here, hopefully soon, out at a remote site here in southeastern Arizona, in Safford, Arizona, where we have some pretty spectacular receiving antenna systems that we're going to use to study the noise characteristics at remote sites in the United States, and hopefully use it to monitor noise sources in the southwest area on low frequency propagation paths. So just tuning in, just trying to keep abreast of everything. I'm a retired systems engineer, used to deploy all kinds of interesting systems for the government and do a lot of testing. And one of the things coming up here soon, which should be interesting to everybody, we'll be calibrating these receiving antenna systems we have out in Arizona with some trusted instruments here that Ed Hare will be providing. And I don't know anybody who's ever done anything like this for antennas, at least in the amateur community. So this will be fun stuff and may set a precedent for things going forward with the rest of the group here. So that's it from here. I'll listen in. Back to you, Dave, A7A.
Well, thank you, Ned. And next on the list, we have Tom, N5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave, and good evening to everybody on the list. Been a pretty busy week getting ready for DCC. Put together the... I think we have an echo. Okay, let me try that again. Putting together things for DCC. Started recording. For DCC and put together a list of potential discussion topics. We may not get through all of them the list as a group, but there's a few Scotty and I need to chat about. There's a few that we need to chat about with Nathaniel and Phil. So I think we'll keep everybody pretty busy next week. Back to list.
Fine business, Tom. And next on the list, we have Scotty, AA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Well, good evening, Dave, and thanks for running the list again. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Mike for recording, too. It really helps to have those online. Been a pretty busy week here, too, trying to get all the non-SDR tasks all finished up at work so that I can take the next week off and come out here. I'm actually in St. Louis right now at my brother's place. So I've made it about 2/3 of the way to Detroit. So we'll be heading out Wednesday morning at O-Dark 30 and try to get in there toward the early afternoon of Wednesday. And I forget when you're coming in, Tom, so maybe let me know when we get to the round trip part. So maybe we can have dinner on Wednesday. I think you're coming in Thursday. So whenever it is, we can get together and start hammering on the questions, the list you have. I do have the mock-up here, and Rick has asked me to take some photos, and I've been trying to get time to do it. Well, I've been here now, and I've had time to do it, so I'm going to be posting some photos of the mechanical mock-up to the list and let people take a look. And I do have the tentative dimensions. We'll see how if they're big enough. If they are, we'll have to adjust them. So I'll have the model with me at DCC so everybody does the mechanical model so everybody can see where the PMI plugs in, where the USB ports are, and just kind of my first guess at how we can plug everything together. And it may change, but at least it's a start, a stake in the ground. So I guess that's it for this week. Back over to you, Dave.
Okay. Next on the list, we have Dan in for a XWE. And Dan is shown as recording. Dan, do you have some comments?
Oh, yeah, I've got a few comments, Dave. Thanks. Yeah, I'm recording because I'm kind of Mike's backup, I guess. And if everything goes well with Mike's recording, I'll just dump mine. So anyway, that's the reason for that. I kind of missed the last 3 weeks, I think it has been, ever since Labor Day weekend, when I kind of forgot about it. And then last week I remembered. And unfortunately, I fell asleep. I had a long day on Monday and couldn't quite stay awake during the allotted time for this. Anyway, haven't really done much this week. I've been working a little bit with GNU Radio and trying to get a new computer system up and running. Let's see, I guess that is about it. I'm trying to catch up on all the stuff that's happened while I haven't been here, and I'll get that done hopefully early this week. And back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business, Dan. And so that brings us back to the list. We'll give John N8OBJ a chance again. Go ahead, John.
Well, hopefully this time I think I figure out how to turn on. Am I transmitting and can you hear me? Over?
Yes, success.
Yeah, well, it changed it on me. I had set it to F12, and it moved it to the mouse button 1. So this is new to me. So, but we got over that hurdle. David Kasdan says, hi, he has been out of power since Friday night when a storm came through Cleveland and Cleveland High or Euclid Heights, University Heights, I'm sorry, where he's located looks like a war zone. It was taking out trees that were 3 and 4 foot in diameter that made it look like toothpicks. So he's got a, he didn't get hit, but his neighbors got pounded pretty bad. So he doesn't, has not had power since then. So he sends his respects and says, hi, and sorry you can't make it. What I've been doing basically is still working on the low-cost receiver. We've been I've had one running since beginning of July, and we're taking data. I have modified the FLDG program to automatically record and then label the files automatically on a day-by-day basis based on UTC time, and we're looking at different ways of improving that, and that's basically where we are. Back to net.
Fine business, John. And I don't know if I think Nathan said her name was Katie. Katie8OXT, did you want to try to speak?
Looks like Christina's having the same problem I am. Christina, try using the left mouse button. See if that works. NetOBJ out.
Essentially, the routine is to go to Tools, Options, Capture, and then select Push to Talk, and then you have an option to pick any key you want at that point. Well, at this point, we're open for general discussion.
So what time do you get in, Tom?
Gosh, I get in after 11 p.m.
Oh, one of those, huh? Is that on Thursday or on Wednesday?
On Wednesday.
Okay, so you'll be there for the board meeting then?
Yes, I will. I'll show up and try to resemble a board.
Try to show up and act bored?
Yeah, no, that's an animated group. It's hard to fall asleep when that group's going.
Yeah, well, Tom won't be there, and Stana won't be there, and Daryl won't be there, so it's going to be kind of usually Tom's good for lots of comic relief, you know.
Okay, well, that's a shame. I wanted to say thank you to Tom for the noise sources, which have proven to be extremely useful.
Yeah, his wife is having some medical issues, and he thought it better that he stay home and take care of her. So we all heartily agree.
Yep, most important things first.
Say, Scotty, I was going to give you a comment that you're so much louder and clearer tonight. I think it's just you're down the road.
Yeah, that's right. I'm 40 over 9, right? Because I'm closer.
Yeah. No. Oh, it's probably a different mic.
It's actually the same exact computer. It must be my brother's Wi-Fi is better than mine is.
It could be that. I don't know. I was just kidding you.
Yeah. Okay. Oh well. You know, you get the guys that are listening to you on the repeater, and they say, "Wow, you know, you're really strong here."
Yep.
Well, Scotty, did you have you had a chance to look over the list that I sent out last week and the revision this morning?
I didn't see the revision. I didn't get a chance to look at the revision. I saw the initial list. It looks pretty comprehensive. I hope we can get to all those topics.
Yeah, I think the key one is trying to resolve the power distribution scheme, because all of the board layouts and schematic captures really will be dependent on having an answer to that question.
Yeah, and I think the question to your question is going to be, I know the first question as the data engine designer would be, how much power do you need at those voltages? And if it's generally a very low amount, then we can decide either to have you generate it locally with an LDO off of the next higher voltage, or we could just feed it to you and then you get to filter it on your board. And because I will probably have all those voltages on the DE, so we put them on the connector, right? So at the very least, you'll have to use LC filters to filter them, and that may be enough.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I got an email from John Ackerman, and he indicated that he thought for the synthesizer and the oscillator, he was going to need to derive his own voltage. I don't know about the receiver. I may need to do that. I'm worried about the ADC driver having clean enough power.
How much current do you think we're going to need at 1.8 volts for those?
The A to D converter is listed at 300 milliwatts, and so that would be about 200 mils maybe. So I'm guessing maybe 200 milliamps.
So is 1.8 volts the core power also, as well as the I/O power?
Yes, it's the power on everything, but I haven't looked at the chip to see, you know, if there's separate power inputs for the I/O drivers that are independent from the power that runs the A to D converter. If they're two independent powers, then we may want to drive the power separately.
Yeah, so the digital power would be much easier to source off of the DE, especially since it's going to be driving the part that uses the same digital power. And then the core power you might want to have real quiet, so you might want to do that separately. Is that what the rationale is?
Yeah, exactly. I haven't looked through the ADC driver chip selection yet. I did the long list for the converters, but not for the drivers. And that's going to be next to see what supply they run off of. Do you recall what the power supplies were on the ADC driver on your board?
What do you mean on my board? We don't have an ADC driver.
Oh, okay. What did you use on the to drive the A to D converter?
Are you talking about like on the Hermes board or on the IQ2?
Yeah, on the IQ2.
Okay, yeah, well, of course, that would be the same as the Hermes board. Duh. It's the 6400, I think. And we used, if I remember right, that was all 3.3 volts. And so everything was run off of the 3.3 volt supply. We just filtered it with a series inductor and then three different decades of capacitors.
Okay. Well, that's probably, you and I can talk about that maybe with John Ackerman at DCC. I don't think we need to get the whole crew involved, but my view is we're going to kind of need to settle that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that really is an implementation detail that we need to work out. And, you know, we need to look at the timeline a little, because my concern is that I don't want to get a cart before the horse. So even though I can probably power through the DE and get it all done, I think we ought to at least have a rough outline of the clock module, the GPS DO clock module and the RF module before we commit anything to real hardware, real copper, because my CAD guy is saying that he may need to swap pins on the data engine. And I'm thinking, you know, we may end up, although it looks nice and pretty on the connector, you're putting all the pairs together in a line, we might end up having to move them around a little bit because of routing.
Yeah, no problem. I understand that. That's exactly what I would expect a layout person to request.
He's probably going to freak out when I show him how little room he has for routing anyway.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Nathaniel, you had a couple of comments on Bill's documents, and I just got the email here a couple of minutes ago. Are those the same ones that have been on the document repository for a few months, or have there been changes to those documents recently?
These are brand new comments. So we made them on Saturday morning. And so unfortunately, most of them are in the Adobe PDF format, again, just because that was, it works really well for actually making the comments. So the PDF documents have those Adobe comments on there. The Word document has Microsoft Word comments in it. And then I also did a high-level summary of the comments that are, it's right in the body of the email that Bill forwarded to. So these are all brand new comments.
Okay, very good. I'll download all those and put them on the PC so I can read them on the airplane.
Yeah, the reason those were delayed was because they got bounced on the list because they were too big. So the best thing that Bill could do next time is to post only one at a time, because we have like a 200K limit for documents, and all of his documents together were like 3.5 megabytes. So it bounced the mail. I had to manually okay it to get it through.
Well, thank you very much for doing that.
Oh, no problem. I mean, it needed to be seen, but maybe we need to up the size, because we have control over how big of an attachment we let go through. It's just that it goes out to like 50 people now on the list, and it just starts sending huge megabyte files. It adds up pretty fast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, it's helpful to know the time frame. So I'll go ahead and put those in the review instead of the previous documents. And it, no problem with the format. You know, as long as we can read the comments, everything's good.
Okay, so Tom, that's great.
Look, Tom, are those up on the website also?
I just saw the email. The website had the older versions of the documents that Nathaniel, I think, was commenting on. And I just wanted to make sure I read the current document rather than some old version.
Oh, okay, because if these supersede the ones that are on the web, then maybe we ought to try to get the latest ones up there and move the other ones to the old file folder.
These would supersede them. They're the same original document, but they have the comments are new. And there's quite a few comments. Also, the Word document, which is a detailed specification document, that's a brand new document. There's no equivalent document on the website.
Okay. Well, I think everyone who's here is on the list, so at least everyone gets to see it, and it needs to be on the website really once we get it more or less corrected with all the comments incorporated.
Yeah, that sounds good. So I think Bill's not going to try to incorporate those comments until after the DCC, and that way he can get more feedback from other people too, and add them in and just do all of the comments all at once.
Okay, and Bill is going to be at DCC, right?
Yes, he is. So now we were talking about meeting to review these things on a Friday evening around 7 p.m. And so, you know, anyone else who'd like to say things in person, you know, then that's a good time to meet and talk about this. I also know that I'm looking at Tom's list of questions that we have, and I wonder if it makes sense to discuss a few of those tonight. And then again, when would be the best time at DCC to discuss, you know, to further discuss them? Over.
Well, Friday night's the social, so that's a good time to discuss it, unless there's other things that you need to discuss. There's a couple other people I need to talk to at DCC, but other than that, this is kind of the priority for me. So it's all good for me on Friday.
Well, that's good for me. I'm available all Friday evening to work on this.
And then maybe if we have any overflow discussion that really needs it, we can work on it a little bit after the Saturday banquet, because usually the banquet convenes between 8:30 and 9. So, you know, we'd have maybe an hour to talk if everybody's not too tired on Saturday.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. I'm looking. So one of the questions on here are the schedules for the modules, testing, and prototype. Now, Scotty, you already have kind of a schedule figured out for like the data engine and the clock module. You have something in mind, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And we can discuss that. Probably the best thing is when we get there on Friday. But it's going to be, I'm going to venture to guess that I'm going to have a data engine by the end of the year.
Okay, that would be great.
What do you mean by that?
I'm going to have a prototype data engine by the end of the year.
Okay, so does that mean there'll be firmware for it, or is that just a working board?
No, well, that's a board to start testing. So we'll get the board, and then I plan to use one of our SDR stick modules and plug it onto the side on the basically the RFM2 connector. So I don't need an RF module. I don't need a clock module. I really don't need anything to start testing the DE and exercising it. So what I'll be doing is I'll be writing a test firmware load that will probably test everything with loopback plugs. I'm planning to get some loopback plugs made at the same time so that we can plug them on the RF modules and the leaf board, the IO expansion module, so we can test everything. The goal is to plug a bunch of loopback plugs on the board, load the test code, and then have the test code flash some LEDs, say pass or fail. But again, that's nothing to do with the RF board or the clock module. So we have to figure out how to do that. And I'm thinking that probably we can add to the test code to have them test the RF modules also, because I don't know how you want to test it, because there's really two types of tests to me. There's the design testing, which says, did we make something that actually works? Do the parts work the way that we think they work together? And the lesser test is a manufacturing test, which just says, did everything get soldered down to the board right?
Okay, so the key is that there needs to be some firmware to go on the data engine. So your plan for like version 0.1 of firmware would be essentially just test exercising routines?
Correct, just a self-test, if you will. And then I'd like to also incorporate the bootloader into that, so you know, Dave's bootloader, so that we can easily upgrade the firmware so that you can load in the test code, or you can load in version 1.0, which might actually do something useful like transfer IQ data.
Okay, I'm taking notes here, so I'm being a little delayed in response. So version 0.1 firmware will be self-test and module interface testing code and bootloader?
Correct. That's the plan. And I, like I said, I'm planning to get the hardware prototype back by the end of the year. And then that code will be the first code that we work on, which would be in Q1 of 2020. And then when that gets complete, then we'll launch in. But by the time the RF board gets done, and I'm not sure what the schedule looks like for that, but I'm going to guess after the data engine. Does that sound like correct order?
Yeah, optimally, of course, they would all come out at the same time. If we do a good job of interface control documents, we do a good job of documenting pins and everything, that would be great. It probably will depend on your layout person.
Okay, and the other thing is that keep in mind it took us 3 times to get the Mercury board right. So to me, the digital part's easy and relatively hopefully noise-free. The RF part is not. It's harder to me. So we may have to do more than one of those if we discover that we made a mistake.
Yeah, understand. The key to doing noise testing, of course, is I have to have a data engine to do an RF test on the receiver, because you know the first thing you have to do is get samples out, do a big old giant FFT, and go hunting for all the spurs.
Okay, so suppose we could give you a data engine that would give you HPSDR format, old protocol, the first protocol, so you could look at it with PowerSDR or HDSDR. Would that be useful for debugging?
Oh, absolutely. I can run that into GNU Radio and, you know, basically have a pretty powerful set of tools to look for sensitivity, to look for overload, look for spurs. I'm guessing the problem is going to be, you know, some kind of analog noise in nature.
Yeah. Okay. So let's count on doing that. What we'll do is we'll take the existing IQ2 code and port it over to this, and that'll give us a jump start. The problem I have is some of the IQ2 code uses Altera macros, so it's not necessarily going to be open source, but we can test with it until we can get open source versions of the modules built.
Okay, very good. So version 2 code will be test code supporting, in a very limited fashion, OpenHPSDR V1.
Right. I think that's maybe the best way to go, because then that lets us use the GNU Radio and the existing tools rather readily to do testing. And then version 3 would be the actual LCC code that goes in. It will all be open source and all support all the LCC commands that are currently not quite defined yet.
Okay, very good. So, version 3 will be something close to what we really want to have.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that the FPGA codes will not change very often for a particular application, because it'll be fixing bugs and adding enhancements. And because the LCC is going to be pretty well defined by the time we get there, and we're just going to implement all those functions, and then it'll be kind of like the FPGA code on Hermes.
Okay, very good. I suspect we'll get to a point here where maybe you, Rick, and I and the layout guy will just need to have a few conference calls to try and converge everything.
Yeah, and I've got, like I said, I've got the drawing, the tentative drawing sizes. They haven't been approved by anyone, so they're very tentative. Like I said, the layout guy could tell me that I've been smoking something, that there's no way that this stuff is going to fit on here. But take the sizes with some seriousness and see if what you envision is going to fit on the RF board is going to fit on that form factor. And I've made every one of the layouts, every one of the board size definitions expandable in at least one dimension. So if we find out that, oh, we're short space, we can expand the board in one direction. So we always have room to add more space if we absolutely have to. I'd rather not, but if we have to, we have to.
Okay, very good. So I can count on the RF module being 50 millimeters wide by like 7 meters long.
Yeah, right. Like 49 millimeters wide, because you got to have two of them in 100 millimeters, and then, you know, out to the next county.
Okay, very good, very good. Nathaniel, one of the questions that was brought up maybe 2 or 3 months ago had to do with videos and whether the project needs to put together some videos to kind of explain to the world what we're doing. And you mentioned you had some ideas on that.
Let's see, I don't remember mentioning I had ideas on it. I very possibly could have. I think it's a great idea. If people are willing to do that, I think it sounds really good. Is it, you know, required or necessary? Probably not. But I mean, I think it sounds like a really good idea.
Okay. I saw the answer. You said something about you were going to answer the question at DCC. And I was wondering maybe if the video that gets recorded at DCC might be a good candidate for one of those tutorial or explanatory videos.
I think that's very possible. I mean, certainly the I've been using meetings like the DCC and Hamvention and the Hamsci workshop. They have, you know, served that purpose of kind of telling the world this is what we're doing and what our status is.
Okay. Having the DCC videos on and at least being able to point folks to them, you know, and it'd be good having Bill and you and Scotty and myself kind of explaining what we think we're doing, so that as new folks come onto the project, they have a quick way to get up to speed.
Yeah, so, I think that's true. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so Dave has some pretty good, KB0S has some pretty good video editing experience. Maybe if we could record some segments and have him kind of stitch them together. Dave, could you do that?
Yeah, if it isn't a huge amount of stuff, but you know, part of it is having somebody that has a vision of what you're trying to tell in a story, and then also the other one is having the bits and pieces, and a lot of it can be stitched together with some voiceovers so that it pulls it all together.
Okay, and that's kind of why the DCC and Hamvention videos are good, because everybody has a specific topic and they pretty much talk on subject, and then I know they ended up getting stitched together basically by topic. So there's not really continuity between videos. And I'm thinking that's maybe what we would want, is to have shorter videos on more concise subjects and then maybe chain them together.
So two things, is George bringing his cameras?
I believe so. The quote is George is providing AV. So, although Sean, he's recording it. He met his goal for crowdfunding, so he's going to be there with his cameras.
The question is, well, if I remember right, George, doesn't he live somewhere up there, or did he move?
Yeah, he's local, so he's like 20 minutes away or 30 minutes away, something like that.
Well, the one thing that I always like to do when I do recordings is ask for everybody's PowerPoint or whatever PDF, if they use that. Actually, I had fun with Mike Osman. He didn't have either. He just had a bunch of Linux code, and I was able to work with his images. But it's nice to have the actual image and use that mixed in, because the stuff captured from a distance is less readable.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my job at the DCC, is to collect all those. So we'll get together before you leave on Sunday, and I can give you, transfer them to you so you have all the slides.
Yep. My general goal is not a lot of fanfare, but get it done as quickly as possible.
Yeah, my goal is to have them on the thumb drive before I leave the DCC. That way I have a fighting chance of actually getting them.
Hey, Scotty and Dave, would it make sense to do maybe 30-second to 1-minute interviews with the different people who are working on the different parts of the project? Like, maybe I can give a high-level overview of the science part of it, and, you know, Scotty, you could talk about the data engine and RF board, and then maybe those 30-second interviews might be better than, you know, having the 15-minute to 45-minute talks that people will be giving.
Yes, I agree with that, and I think the other ones are good to have recorded. but can you keep Scotty to 30 seconds?
He can't even keep me from pressing my PTT button here. I was going to say, Nathaniel, can you explain HamSci in 30 seconds?
I can try. We're a amateur radio professional science cooperative that seeks to learn more about the ionosphere and space.
And time's up.
I guess I'll have to work on that.
Work on that elevator discussion that they always talk about.
We have a great elevator.
If you can do it in 30 seconds, you'd be my hero, because I think that's impossible.
It's getting more complicated. It gets more complicated by the day. We have a really good elevator here at school, though. It only goes up half of a floor, so it goes up about 3 feet. So if I can do it in that amount of time, then I'm really good.
I hope that's for heavy boxes or something.
It's for accessibility reasons to get from... They connected an older building and then built a newer building, and so they kind of needed to get the two levels to match up. So for accessibility, they have that.
So
take an elevator to go up 3 feet.
Yeah, that's right.
On our campus, the most convoluted building is the engineering building.
Makes sense.
Well, at least it's convoluted. But is it the DSP lab that's convoluted?
Yes. Scotty, we can do something with the videos if I don't have to worry about cameras.
Okay, I wholeheartedly agree that if we could do some like lightning talk kind of things, a minute or 2 minutes or something, that would have enough content in to get people the gist of what the project is. That'd be awesome if we could manage to pull it off.
And the people that are doing those, if you could have like between one and three slides to go with it, just to illustrate what you're talking about. You don't have to have them when you're recording, but we can put those in the video.
User in your channel stopped recording.
Hey, we have a lightning talk scheduled, so we could have practice sessions at DCC.
Sounds good.
I think Christina's trying to talk on here again. Maybe we can give her a chance recording. See if her microphone's working again.
Okay, go ahead, Christina. See if you can get it to work.
User left your channel. User in your channel is recording.
Yeah, it looks like she's still fighting her audio input problem.
All right, Christina. Well, we see you're there. So as soon as you get that mic working, just give us a shout and we'll let you talk.
Yeah, just break in. We're just a bunch of blowhards and we don't know when to quit anyway. So somebody will say something.
User in your channel started recording.
Ned, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
Do you know Mike Pappas, W9CN?
No, I do not.
Okay, he's up in Colorado. He just acquired a calibrated field strength meter, and he has an interest in trying to calibrate receive antennas. And it might be, I don't know, do you have an interest in chatting with him or what his plans might be?
Yeah, I might. I'm still awaiting some timing on when Ed is going to ship the one out to me. I'm headed to the remote site tomorrow, spending the day there tomorrow. We're doing one of the 20 things we're doing out there is a site survey. We're actually going to GPS survey the endpoints of these antennas. They're all about 800 feet long. There's eight of them. So there's a lot of work getting that. And the intent is to find cooperative partners out in Hamdom that can produce signals for us so that we can then contrast and compare responses between calibrated antennas and our receiving antennas from some remote signal. That could be a little bit of a challenge since most of these calibrated antennas are pretty small aperture. They're dead. they're great in chambers, but when you go out in the world and try to hear somebody 50 miles away, they don't work that well. So we're trying to figure out how to do that at all, and then maybe in a manner that others can do themselves going forward. But I've done this sort of stuff. I spent a career in signal intelligence, trying to find bad guys using crazy networks, and so I'm familiar with what it takes to do this sort of thing. But you don't know what problems you got until you start to try to do it.
Okay, very good. Yeah, Mike, found a calibrated set. I think it has a Helmholtz coil for, you know, for testing loops, and a calibrated receiver for testing receivers. So he was going to look at trying to see if he could figure out the calibration constants for the vertical antennas. And then if they look good, we might see if we can get the supplier of that to let us test a production lot and see if they're all, you know, within a few tenths of a dBE of each other, or if there's variations from antenna to antenna in production.
Now, what antennas are in production? What kind of antennas?
These are high impedance verticals. So what they are is a vertical plugged into a preamp on a box that's on a post in the ground. And then there's some common mode decoupling and a coax.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. good luck. One of my challenges was, you know, I had a DF array for this Army mobile a DF system. And it used like you were talking about, I kind of called it a transimpedance amplifier, you know, current in, voltage out, or power out, actually. And very, very tricky. Parasitics rule the day on that antenna. It's very, very hard to gauge the response, because all kinds of things affect. Now, your counterpoise probably has a bigger aperture than your antenna, and you get really confused by what it is you think you're measuring.
Okay, so would you think we would have more luck trying to calibrate a very small receive loop?
Luck. You'll need luck no matter what you do. Here's the challenge. You know, you got to be sure you know what it is that's actually responding, and not that thing in your head you think is responding. That antenna I was having trouble with, where the counterpoise was a bigger, more responsive to fields than the actual antenna we thought we were calibrating, we had to convert our whole system to go with a balanced, you know, a dipole. We could not use a counterpoise system because of the problem that we were, it was responding more to horizontal polarization than vertical, and we thought we were chasing or calibrating against vertical sources. So you have to be, your antenna has to be selective. It cannot be omnidirectional, because it's just impossible to gauge how it compares to some antenna of single polarization. So it's and these calibrated whips that Ed Hare is going to send to me, I worry a little bit about it, because the box that the whip is connected to is larger than the antenna, and it's not clear to me where the currents are flowing, whether you're actually able to claims correctly that you're measuring a vertical field or some other random field that the whole system responds to. It's a very confusing process, and it takes time to gain confidence in any measuring you make like that. Lots of, you know, stupid little tests where you change something and you expect it to change in a particular way, and if it doesn't, then the model in your head is wrong, and you got to find out what is really happening on a test site.
Okay, well, it sounds like we may be in over our head here, and may need to call on you for questions once in a while.
Yeah, my hope is that we can come up with a routine, something that's bulletproof, that works well, that doesn't require the science, because once you have to apply science, it's going to not go well across the masses.
Okay, yeah, we wanted to have something we you know, we could standardize on, tell folks, you know, buy one or two of those and mount them like this and make an estimate. But that may or may not be practical.
Yeah. You know, the mission of my system may be different than yours, possibly. But I think the basics of characterizing your sensor is the same.
Okay, well, I hope Mike is going to be at DCC. I don't know, but hopefully we'll get a chance to run into him. We had a long discussion last year, and had a real interesting conversation with one of the Kiwi SDR guys. So there's a lot of good people here, but I suspect the problem's a tough one.
Yeah, it's when you get into the RF areas, especially antennas. Like I said to you, it a lot of people want to make things simple, so they create a model and they try like hell to make the model work, but you know, from my experience, you know, there's an old saying that says all models are wrong, some are useful, And you just have to work continuously on making sure that you have a model that can predict the next little experiment you try to run. Once you get reliably able to predict what's going to happen when you change something, then you start to feel gain confidence on it. But just taking something out there and standing it up and taking data and writing it down, saying that's what it is it may work, it may not.
Okay, very good. Has Christina been able to get the mic to work? No, I understand. It seems like everybody has that the first time on TeamSpeak. It's tough to get it up and get started with it.
It looks like her PTT isn't working. We don't see the light up at all. TeamSpeak's one of those things that's a mystery until it works. And if it works, you don't worry about it anymore.
I also recall there was a Vox adjustment. And if you had the Vox on and you had the threshold high, you don't ever get heard.
Yeah, and if you have the threshold too low, then you repeat everything and it echoes terribly.
I know that.
And I had a problem when I first joined where it didn't have the right audio source picked. So I had to go into the settings, even on a laptop where I thought I only had one audio source, I had to go select the audio source.
So you had to enable the only audio source?
That's right, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least Christina, now we see your PTT light.
Maybe she should tap out some Morse code.
Yeah, when I first set this up, my default setting, I set it to the F12, and then when I looked at it, it changed it to mouse button 1, so Windows loses again.
Yeah, we can't hear anything, Christina. We can see the light, though.
You probably have to go into your audio settings and turn the volume up on the mic. That's probably what your problem is.
Scotty, I'm going to have to head out, so I'm going to say 73 and talk to you in a couple of days.
Okay, thanks again, Dave, for running everything, and we'll see you in a few days.
You guys going to have the slide decks for your presentations available?
Yeah, they'll be up on the Tangerine SDR on the website probably right after DCC.
Cool, thanks.
Yeah, most of us are still writing.
Yeah, and Jason is videotaping them, and they'll be up on Ham Radio 2.0 website, the videos will be. He's pretty quick, too.
Even better.
User disconnected from your channel.
Tom, did you get that that paper I sent?
When did you send it, Dave?
Let's see, late this afternoon.
Okay, I came in here without having looked at email for 3 hours.
I don't know. I sent it to Nathaniel and as well. I don't know if it's a paper that anyone else has referenced, but it's about it's somebody at University of Michigan who really evaluated the behavior of the PNI magnetometer excruciatingly thoroughly, to my way of seeing.
Okay. Yes, I did get the paper, and I think I had a copy of that from previous, but it was a real good paper.
I guess I hadn't seen it. I thought maybe I'd heard it referred to, but I came by it through my own meanderings around the net. But they had facilities that nothing I can do can compare to.
Okay, very good. Well, I'll let me see. I have one here. I got on. Interesting. When I hit push to talk, I can't open the file. Okay. What I've got was the PowerPoint version of the paper that you have.
The what point version?
I've got a PowerPoint slide which has a lot of the same figures from the paper that you have. So I suspect the author presented his paper to conference, and I've got the PowerPoint slides from that.
Yeah, actually, this was a paper presented published for the European Commission of Geosciences or something, and some other things. But it sure is thorough. They were very thorough.
Okay, very good. Well, I've got it, and it's now saved in the magnetometer folder. Thank you.
Evidently, even the constitution of the pins used to position the, you know, to mount the magnetometer electrically are of consequence to the sensitivity.
The composition of the pins used to mount the magnetometer?
Yeah, if you, you just use off-the-shelf 0.1 inch pins, spacing pins that have any ferromagnetic content, it significantly affects the sensitivity. I think we may need to use a castellated board that we can lay down on a printed circuit board or something of that sort.
Okay, so maybe we now understand why when the pins are soldered onto the module, it costs so much more.
Maybe. I'm not totally convinced of that. That had occurred to me even before I put mine together, but it may or may not. But there I have ordered a couple of boards that have castellated connections. Unfortunately, they're just SPI, but they, you know, I'll have them for comparison in a day or so.
Okay, very good. Well, that's interesting. It I wouldn't have thought of that. It's, you know, when you get really sensitive in a lot of different kinds of measurements, strange effects start popping up.
Well, those pins are not steel, they're brass.
Here's KD80XT. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Yeah, push to talk doesn't seem to be working. I set a hotkey and it remembers the hotkey, but it doesn't actually turn it on or off. I do have the microphone set up now. I think it was turned off through a system setting, so that's dealt with. And apparently continuous transmission works. I have not yet tried voice detection.
Yeah, voice detection will probably result in a lot of echoes unless you're wearing headphones.
How's this?
Oh, that seems to be working. Are you on Vox now?
Yeah, that's voice detection.
I can't believe PTT won't work, so that's interesting.
I'm really surprised, too, because usually that's the way that I would think of interacting with this.
But it seems to be working okay.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
So, I'm sorry, John.
Sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, John, you seem to have your level set maybe too high because it's distorting when you get on the mic a little bit.
Okay, I will take that under advisement and fix it.
Of course, maybe it's just the speaker on this end. So after all that, do you have anything to say? So, John, are you using PTT or voice activated?
Neither. I'm using the left mouse button. I haven't gone that far yet. Am I still too loud or does that sound better?
You sound much better. I think if you're using the mouse button, you're probably using PTT.
Good point. You are. And the sound is much better. So, Christina, were you hearing distortion in his audio too when he's before?
I was hearing it before. I am not hearing it now. I'm still trying to chase down my issues with PTT not working because I was trying to... Well, here's a question. What's everyone's preferred key for that?
I use the right-hand alt key just to the right of the space bar.
And I use the left control key.
All right, I'll try one of those, because I was trying to use the space bar, because that's what I'm used to. And the problem was that I kept having my cursor in the chat message, so then it would try to send chat messages that were nothing but spaces.
Yeah, if you use a shiftable key like or function or alt, then it will work no matter what the focus is of your mouse, so you don't have to worry about it. I can actually be surfing on the web page and hit the right-hand alt key and speak, and it works.
How about now?
Sounds good. Well, it did work once. Are you still there? Well, that was great one-time use.
Yeah, no, what happened there was I was trying to use the alt key, but I hadn't yet changed the setting, so it was still on voice activation. So PTT doesn't seem to be working on mine at all, which is kind of weird.
Wonder if maybe when you select a new PTT key, you have to exit out of the menu before it takes effect.
I can try it.
And what flavor of Linux are you using?
It says she's on Windows.
Oops, okay.
I am, although maybe I should have put this on my Linux computer, except I don't usually have any microphones connected to that. This is the W80DU club laptop, so I figured it would be good to have TeamSpeak on there for future use as well. It's nice to have something portable as well.
And after fighting with it for an hour and it finally works, you have to do it again.
Yes. But, you know, I usually use Linux, so I'm used to that.
So are you using PTT now on the Alt key? Because it seems to be working fine.
Nope. Just voice activation. I haven't yet switched it. I'm going to try now. You may not be able to hear me. Here we go. All right. I'm holding down Alt, but it doesn't seem to be lighting up, or is it?
Yep, it's working fine.
Oh, cool. It just seems to be a little bit delayed, but I can get used to that.
I think there's actually a setting for delay, but I think it's on release of the PTT in the tools options capture menu.
Yeah, there it is. Let's try now.
It seems to be working fine. We hear you and the light comes on and everything.
Cool. Oh, I see what's going on. I have PTT and also voice activation going. So when I hold down the key, I'm expecting it to be transmitting, and then it doesn't light up until I start to talk.
Okay, so you enable the Vox with the key.
How's that? Ah, it seems to be doing the same thing. That's weird.
Yeah, so I have push to talk selected, but neither continuous transmission or voice activation detection.
Well, I've got this now in a working state, so I'm happy about that.
Working state is good, and it does seem to be working, so leave it alone, I guess. Oh, I saw it come on there while I was talking.
Yeah, my voice activation setting does not work either, so I'm just using push to talk.
Wait a second. I just placeboed myself into getting all confused. It's not using push to talk. It's still on voice activation, even though I switched it to push to talk. What's going on there?
I say leave it alone. It works fine.
At least on the Linux version in the Linux window, the options window, there is a voice activation detection while using push to talk checkbox, which should be off.
It's actually also available in the Windows version. You have to hit the advanced options little key and that shows up.
Yeah, I opened that up a little while ago. Regardless of whether that box is checked or not, switching it to push to talk just doesn't seem to work. The only thing that's working for me is voice activation detection. So I'll fight with it sometime offline. You guys don't need to deal with this.
So we can hear the dog barking if you had a dog.
Yeah, probably.
So did Steve send you all your hotel information? You're all set, right?
Yes, we are. We are very excited. It's going to be me and Skylar, KD9JPX, and Rob, AC8YV.
All right, very good. Look forward to seeing all you guys there.
Absolutely, and likewise.